This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to LabCast from OpenView. Today we have Michael Harris with us. Michael is the CEO at Insight Demand, which is an insight selling sales training company. He's also the author of the new book, Insight Selling, Sell Value and Differentiate Your Product with Insight Scenarios. It's a great book. I definitely recommend it, and you can check it out. It's available on Amazon.com. So, Michael, really happy to have you here with us today.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
And really excited to talk about the book and talk about some of the key concepts. I think our audience is definitely familiar and very interested in the concept of insight selling. It's something that has been taking the sales world by storm the past couple of years. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about your thoughts on it and why it's so important for salespeople today.
Okay, sure. Well, I'll do that right away. I think insights are key right now. I think buying has changed, so selling has to change. I know that when I get sick, the day before I go and visit the doctor, I immediately go onto the computer and I visit at WebMD and I try to immediately become an expert. Of course, I don't become an expert, but I think I do.
Absolutely.
And I analyze my symptoms. I figure out what I need. So by the time it rolls around that I walk into the doctor's office, I'm pretty much looking for him just to write me a prescription for what I want. If he did that, you know, he wouldn't be doing his job properly, just like salespeople wouldn't be doing their job properly with their customers. And his job is to provide me with the optimum solution. Now, if what I was looking for was simple, then sure, you don't even need a salesperson or a doctor. I should just buy it online. But if it's complex, I think you can pretty much rely on the inability of patients or of customers to have the time or expertise to really do a proper diagnosis and really do a proper analysis of the vendors and offerings that are out there. So what the doctor needs to do and what the salesperson needs to do is reteach what their customer has learned online so that they end up with the right solution. And that's what I think is so important about insight selling today.
Right. No, that's such a great point. And so, you know, one thing that really jumped out for me in your book is something that it's a concept that we've been talking about in some previous podcasts. It's actually this idea that you need to be selling not just to the rational side of your buyers. And so not just focusing on those, you know, benefits of the product and just the business benefits, not just your technical features, but you also need to be appealing to the emotional side too. And that's something that you definitely tackle on in the book. And I think you make a lot of really good, interesting points.
Yeah, I guess we write about sometimes what we most need to learn. So this was a really difficult topic for me because I am quite rational. I worked on Wall Street for 14 years. When I chose my daughter's school, just a couple of years ago, going from grade 6 into grade 7, I put together an Excel spreadsheet to pick the school with a matrix of all the criteria I was looking for so she could get into a great university.
Wow.
But you find out life doesn't always work like that, and none of the schools really spoke to me. My rational decision criteria wasn't working. And in the end, I picked a school that didn't feature on any of their criteria. The school just spoke to me. Hmm. And that really got me thinking that, you know, we don't make the rational decisions like we think we do. And, you know, and yet we've been conditioned to think that for 2,500 years, going all the way back to Plato, where he said that man is rational and it's our emotions that get in the way of rational decision making. And that's what I always thought on Wall Street is that, you know, serious business people, of course, wouldn't bring emotion into the decision criteria. But today, with neuroscience, we can finally break open that black box of our minds and see what really inspires people to make decisions. And there's a really interesting study out there that was done by Antonio Damasio, a neuroscientist, in 1982, when he had a patient by the name of Elliot who came and saw him. This patient had a brain tumor. They removed the brain tumor, and the only part of the brain they removed was the emotional part of the brain. This patient, Elliot, had an extremely high IQ, so the conventional wisdom was, hey, if we remove the emotional part of the brain, and if that's the part that gets in the way of making rational decisions, then this guy's just going to become a decision genius.
Right, right.
What happened is actually quite sad. Elliot actually got caught in paralysis for analysis.
Wow.
He could, you know, his IQ was still the same, but he couldn't even make the most rudimentary decisions. He couldn't decide on whether to choose a blue or a black pen. There's a video clip of him on YouTube trying to pick the best restaurant, and he's going through this elaborate decision criteria of what restaurant to pick. And yet he never comes to a conclusion, because what they've actually been able to prove is emotions don't get in the way of making rational decisions. They're a vital component of making rational decisions.
That's fascinating. And it makes sense when you think about it. I mean, you can do all the research you want. You can be presented with all the facts and all the details. And in the end, what gives you that nudge to actually take a leap? It often is something that's emotional. And one thing that's, I think, is also interesting is coming at it from the flip side. A lot of times that barrier that's causing us not to take the leap is emotional as well. It's fear, you know, fear of the unknown, fear of change. And so it really does make sense that your sales and marketing materials really have to address those things.
Well, Jonathan, I think that's fascinating, because I think you picked on a really interesting point in terms of it's the emotional fear of failure that is very strong in the customer's mind. And if we only provide them with rational reasons on why to buy our product, we all know that people aren't inspired to act on reason alone. You know, they do need those emotional reasons. And if we don't provide them with that, then the only thing that feels real is the fear of change. So what we have to do is make the fear of the status quo seem more scary than the fear of buying or change. And I think that's extremely important. I know I learned this in one of my many episodes of my midlife crisis, where I was teaching myself to learn to do a standing back tuck, backflip. Don't ask why.
Wow.
It's embarrassing. But I went to a gym to learn to do this. And for the life of me, I couldn't do the back tuck without my coach spotting me. And in spite of the encouraging words that my coach would give me, like, come on, Michael, don't be such a wimp. You don't need me to spot you. You know, you're doing a back tuck, fine. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to land on your knees. And for crying out loud, it's a padded floor. But, you know, in spite of all the logical reasons that he was giving me, it just couldn't overcome my emotional fear of breaking my neck. And just like I was afraid of breaking my neck, I think customers are afraid of losing their job if they make the wrong buying decision. So, you know, they need those other reasons as well to get them over that fear. Otherwise, that's the only emotional feeling that they have.
All right. I mean, it's a very real fear, especially for B2B buyers, you know, making million-dollar decisions in some cases. I think you're absolutely right.
Let's do a thought experiment.
Okay.
Okay, let's do a thought experiment. Imagine you or some of your listeners out there that you're a regional VP of sales for, you know, Software USA Inc. And you're walking over the Waterloo Bridge in London, England, and it's a, you know, sunny April morning. And you've just spent $1,000 on your wardrobe because you're off to the biggest interview of your life to run the European operations, and this would just be a fantastic opportunity. So as the sun's beating down on your face, you know, you look down, see a puddle, sidestep the puddle, and out of the corner of your eye, you see a girl jump off the bridge. Without even thinking, you run to the other side of the bridge, and you dive into the water. And as you're walking out of the river, and you hear your very expensive $300 shoes go squish, 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 and your whole suit is ruined that you spent over $1,000 on, that doesn't bother you. Because as you look down into her eyes, you realize she's about the same age as your daughter. Now, that's a insight scenario. Let's compare that to a facts and figures scenario. So the next day, after a very wet but successful interview, you're in the hotel bar. And you're flipping through The Economist magazine as you enjoy a drink. And as you're just about to finish the drink, you come across an advertisement for the relief victims of the Indonesian tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And they're providing you a whole host of facts and figures. For the fraction of what you spent on your wardrobe, you could save hundreds of lives. And they tell you all about the airlifts of medicine, of medical supplies, and of water purification. But none of that really grabs you. And as you look at your watch, you realize you better get going, and off you go to the airport. So, you know, what story motivates you more?
Well, yeah, obviously it's the first one for sure.
It is the first one. And the question is, why is that? And I think the reason why is that facts and figures don't feel real. They don't feel like you can't see them and you can't touch them. So they don't feel like they touch you or affect you directly or indirectly. Right. And without context, you're leaving it up to the buyer to figure out why they need your stuff, or even worse, why they should care. And so that's why one story about a little girl falling off the bridge has 100 times more impact than all the facts and figures. And it's more likely to get you to act. And charities don't let this go unnoticed. Charity letters that are about one person versus many pull 2 times the donations.
Wow. Wow. I mean, it makes sense when you point it out. I mean, but it is really interesting. And another thing that pops out in those scenarios is, in both, you're invited to be able to do the right thing, to feel good about what you're doing. But in the first one, it really is more clear, just with your descriptions and everything, how you have the potential to be a hero, which is something really interesting. I think there's definitely opportunities for sales and marketing people to be shaping their content to really present scenarios like this.
That's what I have really come to appreciate, because to me, a story, and I call them insight scenarios, and the reason I call them that is because often people think they already tell stories, but when I hear them, you know, they're often, they could be a lot better. And by creating an insight scenario, there's nothing worse than being told a story that's a little bit dull. But right. If it's an insight scenario, really what you're doing is you're taking a sales insight. You know, you're looking for where the biggest gap is between what the customer believes today and what they need to believe to buy your product. And then you're closing that gap with a story. And because of that, it has a much greater impact and makes the story much more interesting, which I think is critically important.
Absolutely. And so, do you have any suggestions? You know, this is great advice for, you know, particularly motivated salespeople to pick up on their own, to put forth the effort to improve their own selling, you know, activities and to really improve their own behaviors. Do you have any tips for organizations that want to try to implement this in a more kind of structured across the board? You know, I want to help my whole team do this.
Yeah, I think everyone wants their salespeople to be trusted advisors, but there's no shortcut there. A CRM system's not going to do it. Right. A sales process isn't going to do it. Really, what's going to do it is making your salespeople smarter. And the best sale we could ever make is to have our customers use our stuff for 6 months, because then really they discover on their own terms the value of your offering. Mm-hmm. The second best way is to put your salespeople in the role of customer service people, to really work with the customers for a couple of years, to have them help your customers use their stuff, because the more you learn on the back end, the better you are on the front end. But that's pretty expensive sales training. And probably the third best way to do it, and the way that I would suggest, is to take those people who have these stories, and these are your successful salespeople, because they're already making sales today, or your customer-facing salespeople, and get the stories from them. And then put those into a consistent format that then can be shared with the other salespeople. But it's more than just teaching them to tell someone else's story. The salespeople needs to make that story their own.
Right. That's a very key point. I mean, it sounds like a good approach in terms of all teams have those all-star reps that are doing the right thing anyway, and you really want the other reps to be able to replicate those behaviors. But you bring up a good point that, you know, you can give them the tools, but everyone needs to make these stories their own. Because we can tell, I mean, this seems like something incredibly useful, you know, hard to script. I mean, you can't just hand out a script of this and expect it to work as effectively as getting someone to do it more naturally.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why often having the salespeople do them in bullet point format works quite well, because there's a difference between going to the symphony and listening to jazz, and I think telling stories are more like playing jazz, where you've got to improvise, because really what you're looking for is the heart of the story, and the heart of the story comes from the heart of the person that's telling it, and they have to put themselves in the story as if they're actually there, and then describe what's happening.
right? We're kind of running out of time here, but one other thing I wanted to hit on, you know, the book has some great recommendations around doing this, and it also has some really compelling evidence of the impact this can do. One stat that jumped out at me was that actually sales can be 20%, or messaging can be 20% stickier with a story. Can you talk a little bit about that finding?
It's actually 20 times, but we don't really have time to get into the research. But here's what we have time for. I would ask that all of the listeners right now just take 10 seconds and write down on a piece of paper in front of you the five most significant events in your life. So just take a couple of seconds to write that down.
I'm going to do this too.
Okay. Now, you might have gotten to five, you might have gotten to the third point, it really doesn't matter. Now I want to ask you a question. Each of those points, were they emotionally charged?
Yeah.
That's why you remember them. And there's an interesting study that's been done on this in the University of California, where a doctor injected rats with strychnine, which is a poison, but it also substitutes adrenaline. And they found that rats remembered better if they were injected with this, with going through a maze. But the really odd thing is they found that it worked better if they did it after the event to be remembered instead of before. And that seems weird until you look at it in an evolutionary context and you think that you're going through the jungle, you're going through the savanna in Africa, you know, thousands of years ago. And you come across a lion that comes out of a cave. You quickly run and hide behind a rock. As you're hiding behind the rock, you're emotionally charged, your heart is beating, and your adrenaline is pumping like crazy. And what you're doing is remembering not to go past that point again. So that's why it's so important to wrap your sales insights in emotion. And that's really all the story is a fact wrapped in emotion, because that makes it memorable and that makes your sales sticky, so that long after the facts and figures of your PowerPoint presentation has been forgotten, if you tell them a story, they'll remember that. And you know it was a good story when they can then tell it to someone else.
Right. Well, that's great. And Michael, I really appreciate you taking the time again. Is there, you know, people can go to your website, obviously. Are there other places people can go to reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, sure. My website is a good place to go, but I wrote my book not as a teaser for my workshops. I wrote my book to stand alone. So if you have companies that don't have enough to bring funds to bring someone in right now, they're more than welcome to use my book. And not only do I talk about what insight selling is, not only do I describe the best way to deliver insights, but I also describe in great detail in terms of how they can put together their own insight scenarios.
That's great. Well, Michael, again, I really appreciate you taking the time. I definitely recommend the book to everyone. Thank you again. I'm looking forward to following up and doing this again sometime soon.